In his weekly briefing, the Iranian foreign ministry spokesman said the U.S. is slowing down the process.
Iran and the U.S. still have differences over some of the issues. What's ahead is for the U.S. to make a political decision and lift the sanctions.
Reports coming out of Vienna suggest that the excessive demands of the U.S. and European parties to the deal are to blame for the sluggish talks. The U.S. wants the destruction of Iran's new generation centrifuges in exchange for only a temporary suspension of some of the anti-Iran sanctions, a demand beyond Iran's commitments under the accord. In his first presser as president-elect, Raisi made it clear that the U.S. must lift all sanctions before Tehran returns to its full compliance to the Atomic Accord. He said he will not allow the talks to become erosive.
The Americans violated the JCPOA and the Europeans did not comply with their commitments. The U.S. was obliged to remove all sanctions under the JCPOA, but it has failed to do so. The Americans should return and fulfill their commitments. I tell the Europeans not to be impacted by the pressure and the foreign policy of the Americans and to fulfill their obligations under the JCPOA.
Officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action or the JCPOA, the nuclear deal has been in limbo for 3 years since the former U.S. administration discarded the accord in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Iran. In a tit-for-tat, Tehran adopted a stepwise suspension of its own nuclear commitments. The last remedial step involved ramping up the purity level of enriched uranium to 60%, way above the 3.67% cap set by the deal. The Iranian Foreign Ministry hopes the Vienna talks will conclude before Rouhani's term is over. Observers say this scenario is the best for the U.S., and any foot-dragging means the talks will have to continue with the new Iranian administration, which maintains a tougher tone toward the U.S. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The right to assemble, to demonstrate, to be heard by people in power, a cornerstone of democracy. Potentially under threat in proposed UK government legislation that gives the police sweeping new powers.
Police now, for the first time, are going to have the ability to restrict static protests or even to ban static protests. Now, making too much noise is going to be regarded as something that could be problematic. There's also a provision in the bill for a new crime of creating a public nuisance, which has incredibly a prison sentence of up to 10 years attached to it.
And it was those provisions in the bill that got people out on the streets over the past year, not just in London, but up and down the country.
Parliamentary committee's warning echoes campaigners' concerns that the policing bill is deeply imbalanced. Apart from issuing unwarranted curbs such as noise limits on protests, they say, it does too little to protect women. That it metes out longer jail terms, let's say for vandalism, than it does for sexual assault.
The government response has been one of denial and defiance. Our proposed measures, it says, are in line with human rights legislation and in no way impinge on the right to protest.
There is no such thing as a protest that doesn't in some way impinge or disrupt other people in society. That's the point. That's the nature of protest. There's a kind of hostility to the very kind of philosophical notion and nature of protests right at the heart of this bill, and that's why we shouldn't believe it.
The contentious legislation came after protests by the Extinction Rebellion movement that first began in 2018 and last year's toppling of the statue of a slave trader in the southwestern city of Bristol during the BLM protests. The UK government has a majority in Parliament. It remains to be seen if the ongoing protests, the warning from the Committee on Human Rights, and concerns among some of its own libertarian MPs will prevent the draft legislation from becoming law. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Iran's AB Home and several lawyers have filed a complaint against Mölnlycke Healthcare, a Swedish medical device company, over its refusal to sell medical products to Tehran under U.S. pressures. Mölnlycke Healthcare refused to sell Iranian AB patients medical care items they needed, including Mepilex dressings. Several children in Iran who suffered from epidermolysis bullosa lost their lives due to the lack of urgently needed medical equipment, and some others were hurt by severe physical injuries, including amputation. Many human rights groups have criticized the U.S. for cutting off banking ties with Iran through threatening the international banks with punitive fines by the U.S. Department of Treasury, which has resulted in cutting Iranian patients' access to necessary medical items.
Since May 2018, that the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the JCPOA, up to May 2019, a number of children suffering from EB died only because they did not have Mepilex dressings. I want to tell those who claim to be defenders of human rights what has been the crime of this 37-day-old baby who died of the disease only because we did not have Mepilex dressings as a result of the U.S. sanctions.
The move has deprived EB patients, also known as butterfly patients, of essential medical items, killed many of them, especially children, and inflicted serious physical injuries, such as amputation, to some of the patients. The complaint seeks to protect the victims of the open violation of human rights committed by the Swedish company and prevent similar criminal measures.
The Iranian Center for International Criminal Law, an NGO based in The Hague, has submitted a complaint to the Swedish National Contact Point stating that the Swedish company had breached the OECD guidelines by failing to undertake appropriate human rights due diligence, adversely affecting the human rights of EB patients in Iran and failing to remedy its impact. The lawsuit calls on Swedish National Contact Point to hold the company accountable and take action to compensate for the losses Iranian EB patients have suffered and to resume trading with Iran.
Nearly 30 Iranian EB patients, mostly children, have died since Mölnlycke stopped selling its dressings to Iran, saying that for EB survivors, the pain has increased by 70%.
Iranian officials have repeatedly blasted the U.S. for imposing sanctions against the country, stressing that such inhumane sanctions have intensified the sufferings of kids with no access to special medicines for incurable diseases. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran's president-elect Ebrahim Raisi has highlighted the principles of his government's foreign policy in his first news conference since his election last week. Raisi took a jab at the U.S. and Europe for the failure to live up to their commitments under the 2015 nuclear deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA.
The Americans violated the JCPOA and the Europeans did not comply with their commitments. The U.S. was obliged to remove all sanctions under the JCPOA, but it has failed to do so. The Americans should return and fulfill their commitments. I tell the Europeans not to be impacted by the pressure and the foreign policy of the Americans and to fulfill their obligations under the JCPOA.
This comes as Iran and the remaining signatories to the JCPOA are engaged in talks in the Austrian capital to revive the accord, which has been hanging in the balance since former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed sanctions as part of his administration's maximum pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic. Raisi said his government will support negotiations that ensure Iran's national interests, but also made it clear that his foreign policy will not be limited to the nuclear pact.
Maximum pressure hasn't worked on our people, and so they must reconsider and return. Our people have shown that they resist pressures, and they must know that foreign policy of our administration does not start with the JCPOA and will not be limited to it either.
And this is how he responded to calls by some Western countries for including Iran's missile program in the Vienna talks to revive the JCPOA.
Iran's regional and missile programs are not negotiable. They have not fulfilled their commitments regarding issues that have already been negotiated and agreed upon. How can they enter into new discussions?
Raisi said his administration will focus on an expansive and balanced interaction with the world and would also be open to restoring ties with Saudi Arabia.
Ties with neighboring countries will be my administration's priority. With regard to ties with Saudi Arabia, there is no obstacle from the Iranian side to the reopening of embassies within the two countries.
Raisi also touched on the Saudi-led war on Yemen, calling for an immediate end to the conflict. Tehran has stressed that it seeks to establish ties with all countries based on mutual respect. Now it seems to be seen how Western and regional countries will deal with the new administration when Raisi takes office in August after he won over 60% of the vote in last week's election.
The week that saw British PM Boris Johnson's Conservative Party lose a previously safe parliamentary seat to the Liberal Democrats in a by-election northwest of London had another surprise in store. Former Parliament Speaker John Bercow changing allegiances and joining the opposition Labour Party and sharing harsh words about the Conservative Party and its leader.
If you believe, as I do, that this government is bad news, unfit to govern, and that the Prime Minister, though a successful campaigner, is a lousy governor.
The former Parliament Speaker went on to describe the Prime Minister as someone who has only a nodding acquaintance with the truth in a leap year, and complimented Labour leader Keir Starmer as an honest man.
His move to Labour signifies the sort of internal corruption and hostile and aggressive attitude, the return of the nasty party in terms of this current government.
John Bercow wasn't always anti-conservative. In fact, he started his career in 1997 as a self-described rabid right-winger and served as a conservative MP for 12 years, but says his political stripes have changed.
My values are left of center. I do not identify with the Conservative Party.
In 2009, he was elected as Parliament Speaker, a job he kept for the next 10 years. Although he kept his links with his former party, he wasn't very popular with the Conservative MPs, especially over Brexit. That led to the Prime Minister not putting his name forward for peerage. Bercow denies his pivot to Labour has anything to do with it.
Bercow's explanation of why he joined the Labour Party bears credence. The modern context of the Tory Party is one of corruption, one of regressive policy in very many areas, including international aid, one of cronyism at the highest level.
The UK Parliament's first Jewish former speaker also described the Conservative Party and its leader Boris Johnson as reactionary, populist, nationalistic, and sometimes even xenophobic.
Bercow insists that his pivot to the left is not personal against the Prime Minister, that he has reached a conclusion that the current government needs to be replaced, and that the only vehicle through which to achieve that objective is the Labour Party. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Yemen's Ansarullah movement blamed the United Nations for the Saudi atrocities committed against Yemeni children. The movement said the UN has always been providing the political cover-up for the Saudi war crimes. This came after the United Nations added the Ansarullah movement to its blacklist of groups for violating children's rights.
We were not surprised by this decision because the UN had removed the name of Saudi Arabia from its blacklist of the groups violating children's rights. The United Nations have not taken any real steps to protect the rights of Yemeni children who die every day due to continued blockade on food, medicine, and fuel. I believe that this is a resounding scandal for the Secretary General of the UN, who began his second term with this decision.
The member of the Supreme Political Council, Mohammed Al-Houthi, dismissed as baseless the UN accusation, saying it did not refer to an investigation on the ground as the movement has demanded. Meanwhile, the Minister of Information said the UN has turned a blind eye to the ongoing Saudi blockade on Yemenis, which causes the death of tens of Yemeni children on a daily basis.
This classification wasn't based on realistic data. We used to have the United Nations as a political cover for the war on Yemen and the killing of more Yemeni women and children, whether because of the continuous Saudi blockade or because of the airstrikes of Saudi fighter jets. This decision revealed to the world the true face of the United Nations, that it serves the agenda of the countries funding the UN.
Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war against Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed thousands of civilians, including women and children, and turned the war-torn country into the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations.
Observers say the United Nations blacklisting of Ansarullah is politically motivated and has no relation to the humanitarian situation in Yemen. They believe that the UN must take real actions against the Saudi blockade if it has real intentions to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
On Friday, a Palestinian Day event dubbed Women Fighting for Freedom took place in the Verano Garden, not far from Rome's major University of La Sapienza. The one-day initiative gave the public a taste of what the next Palestine festival will be in September. The focus was on the role played by the women in safeguarding the Palestinian culture from the Israeli occupier.
L'importanza che assume la donna nelle varie lotte.
The women play a crucial role in all struggles, whether they are Chileans, Cubans or Palestinians. It's the women who provide an education to the young Palestinians. It's the women who provide assistance in the refugee camps. It's them, again, who pass down our culture through the generations.
The role of the women fighting for freedom was discussed during a round table. The liberation of the territories from the Israeli occupation and the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination were also among the topics touched on during the meeting.
Over the past days, Israel has resumed bombarding the northern parts of the Gaza Strip. This after hundreds of Palestinians, including women and children, were killed in previous Israeli bombardments of the Gaza Strip carried out between May 10 and May 20. Israel's airstrikes also brought widespread devastation to the already impoverished territory.
What is going in Palestine is clearly against the international law, against the UN resolutions, and what is happening by keeping some countries their silence is giving impunity to the occupier.
Unfortunately, nothing will change if the UN and all major countries continue not to take a firm stance on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
People at Rome's Palestinian Day event have called on Palestinians to remain steadfast and fight for their rights despite their suffering. Max Civili, Rome.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Thank you.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely, thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
The debate.
Over 30 Iranian and regional websites have been shut down by the U.S. Justice Department for a number of reasons, including disinformation. In one swoop, websites like PressTV's PressTV.com were shut down, although back in operation with the domain .ir. Why would the U.S. make such a decision? Isn't the freedom of speech one of the pillars of a so-called democracy that's enshrined in the Constitution? Or is that slogan used when it suits them and not when the truth is being exposed about their wars and foreign policy adventures? Stay tuned. This is The Debate.
On Tuesday, viewers trying to access PressTV's website were met with a shocking message. This domain has been seized by the United States government. PressTV was not the only site taken down. Iran's Arabic language broadcasting network Al-Alam, along with Yemen's Al-Masira, faced the same problem. Hours after the domains were seized, the U.S. Department of Justice said as many as 33 Iranian regional websites had been blocked. It said other domains linked to Kataib Hezbollah, a member of Iraq's popular mobilization units, were also made unavailable. The DOJ claimed the seizure was in accordance with U.S. sanction laws. To no one's surprise, Washington's move created huge backlash. In a statement, Press TV denounced the seizure of its website in the strongest terms.
International news network Press TV deplores this measure by the FBI, which has on this occasion targeted it along with a number of other independent media outlets supporting the resistance front. Press TV denounces the U.S. move as a terrorist operation against the global public opinion and views it as an example of banditry and media dictatorship.
Press TV's statement accused Washington of blocking the network's domain due to its precise and substantial coverage of resistant movement activities, particularly by the Palestinian people. Iran's foreign ministry also strongly condemned the seizure of the websites, saying the move was an attempt to silence independent voices. It said Washington's move highlighted its shameful double standards. Earlier, the Iranian government spokesman also denounced the U.S. measure, saying it violates freedom of speech.
The latest measure by the U.S. is against the same principles of free speech, which the country has always been proud of. That means curtailing free speech. The measure means that the U.S. is using tools to prevent the reflection of different viewpoints to the public. The Iranian government condemns this measure.
A flurry of denunciations also came from activists and social media users. Many took to Twitter to vent their anger at what they called an attempt to stifle dissenting voices. This is not the first time Press TV has been targeted by the West. YouTube and Facebook have taken down Press TV's website pages several times in the past. The news network has also been removed from TV broadcasting satellites in Europe, North America, and East Asia, largely due to pressure from the United States and some of its allies. By now, Press TV has long gotten used to facing hurdles in its independent journalistic work and its efforts to give a voice to the voiceless. All these obstructions only make one wonder if the West's declaration of support for free speech is anything more than verbal.
Joining us for this edition of The Debate, we have Brian Becker from The Answer Coalition, who joins us from Washington, D.C. We also have Daniel Yehich, who's an author and researcher, joining us from Beirut. I'd like to welcome you both. Brian Becker, I'm going to take a phrase out of the sentence to try to understand from you what this exactly means. Perhaps you can give us your impression. Where the notice that came from the U.S. Justice Department, as printed in its website, it says, components of the government of Iran to include IRTVU and others like it. And here's the part that I don't understand. Disguised as news organizations or media outlets targeted the United States with disinformation campaigns and malign influence operations. How could the U.S. Justice Department, if they do the work correctly, put this in this type of connotation that there were disguised as news organizations or media outlets? Press TV website has been operational now for a little over 13 years.
Yes, indeed. And many people in the United States, it's an English language network after all, many people in the United States read it. And they read it because they're not satisfied with the mainstream corporate-owned media in the United States that functions largely as an echo chamber for U.S. policy, and U.S. policy is very hostile towards Iran. It's been very hostile towards Iran and towards the Iranian people for many decades. I mean, of course, most notably since the 1979 revolution, but even back in 1952, 70 years ago coming up, when Iran dared to nationalize the British Petroleum Company, the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, as it was known then, the U.S. was very upset with the people in Iran, and so it decided to carry out a coup d'etat, and thousands of Iranians were killed in a CIA British intelligence covert operation, and the democratically elected government was replaced, and a monarch, the Shah, was put on the throne, And the U.S. punished the Iranian people for having a government that dared to be independent from the U.S. or from Britain. So this hostility and animus and arrogance directed against Iran, in this case, actually is also directed against the American people. Like we're told, we're living in the free world, right? That's the slogan. We're living in the free world, but don't you dare think you have the opportunity or the right to hear information coming from outside the free world. And if you think you have that right, American people, we're going to snatch it from you by seizing the website that you rely on for independent alternative news. You can't get more diabolical than this. Also, I think most importantly, perhaps, the U.S. has tried to present itself as a steward over the Internet. This demonstrates that the U.S. stewardship over the Internet can be used as a political lever for American foreign policy, such that instead of being an independent, neutral steward over the Internet, it can take advantage of the fact that the IP addresses and ICANN are still basically under U.S. control and shut down websites that the United States doesn't like. I think this will lead to a fracturing of the global worldwide internet into regional internets, because who should trust the United States to be the steward when it undoubtedly uses its stewardship for its own political ends?
Well, Daniel, if you want to take a look at what Brian Becker has said, it was more politically in tone in terms of the U.S. and the animosity that it has towards Iran. But if you want to take a look perhaps at the content that, for example, Press TV website has and the station itself as a media outlet, do you feel maybe that could be a reason why the U.S. has done this? Because we do talk about topics that U.S. media outlets don't cover as a whole as much as we do. For example, the Israel-Palestine issue, or when it comes to the war on Yemen, or Syria, or Afghanistan. The list is rather long. Again, topics that is not covered as much. Does the content of what we say may be a factor in this?
It is a determining factor, if you ask me. Even this narrative that has been used by the United States now for a while on disinformation clarifies this as well, because the information that, or the content that the Press TV and other media networks and outlets that have been targeted in this latest move are disseminating is contrary to the major or powerful narrative of the U.S. government or of its foreign policy, which has an imperialist and colonialist dimension that perpetuates, particularly in Western Asia. So to that extent, Press TV does offer a counter in the English language. So it is accessible to audiences in beyond the region, and as well as in the United States and English-speaking audiences. And it pretty much, to that extent, contrasts and contradicts and offers an alternative to U.S. or Western Anglophone media. But at the same time, of course, this narrative on this information is also a very hegemonic one, an imperialist one in itself, because the question is rather who defines what information, what disinformation is, and what objective and neutral information is. And in having, again, another moment where they're targeting local media in Western Asia, the United States is trying to consolidate its role as the one who is controlling the narrative and who is attempting to silence voices in Western Asia and to actively limit freedom of media and freedom of the press through this very rhetoric.
Well, Brian Becker, I'm not sure we can get an answer on this, but I'm going to try anyways, for the sake of trying, to find out what really was the thing that tipped the scale here. As I mentioned, for 13 years we've been on air, we've had the website going. We do cover topics that I just mentioned, Israel-Palestine being one of them. But something happened for them. I mean, we didn't go beyond what we've been doing for the past 13 years, but something must have happened in order for them to go through this whole, 36 websites to make a decision to close them down. And the only thing that really strikes here, even though we've gone through it, was the Israel-Palestine war, really the Gaza Strip, the war that happened. And do you think that maybe was a major factor pointing towards how Israel maybe has a role in this?
I'd like to give you a clear answer, but the fact of the matter is that the people in the United States have been in the streets supporting the Palestinian people during the recent confrontation. There were perhaps more than a million people who participated in hundreds of demonstrations, big and small. And I think the U.S. political climate has actually shifted in a way that's a little bit more beneficial to the Palestinians, even though the official policy, of course, is to write a blank check for the Israeli government. I'm not sure if that's the issue. I would lean more in the direction of the U.S. government is showing its muscle and its ability to carry out very, I would say, extreme acts against Iran at the same moment that the Biden administration says that it wants to re-enter the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the so-called Iran nuclear arms deal. And I think there's a debate going on inside the U.S. ruling class, within the U.S. establishment, over that. I mean, Obama expended quite a bit of political capital, and it was generally, while popular with the people, unpopular within the establishment to have negotiated with Iran in the first place. These negotiations, even if they're sort of not direct negotiations, they're at a very sensitive moment. There's been a new election of a new leadership in Iran. I think this is the wing of the U.S. establishment that wants to torpedo any resumption of JCPOA. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. This is an extreme act. This, again, going back to my first point, the U.S. has sort of assumed the mantleship or the stewardship of the internet globally, and there's an idea that goes with it, which is the U.S. won't use its absolute authority, a power, by the control of the infrastructure to shut down sites, but now it has on Iran at a very sensitive moment when the U.S. is negotiating with Iran. You would have to consider that whoever made this decision, was assuming that Iran would retaliate. And thus, instead of having any kind of rapprochement or a return to the JCPOA, that it would scuttle those negotiations. That's my best guess.
Exactly. And Daniel, that brings me to the point where, you know, this .com has its own rules. Of course, anybody can pretty much open up a website, but the way that the Department of Justice went about outlining its law, saying that we did not have permission, we meaning Press TV in this case, that I'm referring to. But then we know full well that they also know that, okay, we can switch to .ir, which is what we did. And almost within the hours of when this happened. So they knew that that was going to happen. So then it brings about the notion then of why this has happened at this time. Two intelligence officials from the U.S., when they spoke to a publication by the name of Time, which said that Iran is stepping up efforts to sow discord inside the U.S., these are the reasons that they cited this. They said that there was anti-Semitic tropes inside the U.S., they said that Biden's effort to restart the U.S. To enter the Iran nuclear deal was another reason. The April 14 announcement of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and the guilty verdict of the Derek Chauvin in April 20th and the 11-day war between Israel and Hamas. These were the reasons. One of them is what Brian Becker said there. Do you think that that was a reason or any of the other ones?
Play a role, but as you mentioned, the shift of the domain from COM to IR, as you outlined, which happened rather swiftly, just shows that the United States must have also been aware of that. And so I think that we have to take into consideration the impact of the public relations dimension in here, where the United States is maybe engaging in just another provocation or showing the power that it has, or trying to shift narrative, of course, adding to this very long anti-Iranian sentiment that there has been in U.S. political discourse as well as in mainstream media discourse. But the events that you mentioned, of course, do play a role because Press TV has reported on these and has offered an alternative point, particularly when it comes to the events in Palestine that took place last month, where, again, another point that I would like to mention is where we have seen scenes of the Zionist regime, which is a major U.S. ally and proxy in the region, bombing a media office, harassing and assaulting journalists live on camera, detaining journalists, besides imprisoning many Palestinian journalists all over Palestine. So in many ways, I mean, the narrative that is being presented by the Biden administration does not make sense in itself. But I think that the events you mentioned may all of them play a role effectively in this sort of diplomatic conflict that the United States is furthering through its latest decision.
Okay, Brian Becker, I'm not too sure which question to ask, as we're quickly running out of time here, but I'm going to ask your reaction to one of the tweets that really struck out from activist Rania Khalik, which you may know or may not know, I'm not sure. She said the most powerful country in the world with 1,000 military bases is so scared of Iranian media websites already suppressed by every algorithm that exists that has shut them down. And then she says, pretty pathetic. What do you think?
Rania Khalik is right. I mean, this in a way demonstrates the weakness of America, where American people have the opportunity to go to a press TV website. It's not dominating American media, but it exists. And so there's an alternative point of view on Palestine, on U.S.-Iran relations, on the Middle East, on what's going on in Lebanon. And the American government is telling the American people, we don't want you to watch this. We don't want you to read this. We're concerned that if you read this, that somehow our fragile democracy is in fact so fragile that this, quote, disinformation will sort of shake us to the core. I mean, it's a real demonstration of weakness by a society and by a government that says, follow us. We are the model. We allow all points of view to be presented. The First Amendment says Congress shall pass no law that inhibits or prohibits the expression of media. That's in the First Amendment, the first one, not the second, not the third, the first, the very first thing. And so we as Americans are taught to cherish the First Amendment. But here you don't have the Congress passing a law. You just have the executive branch of the government acting with dictatorial power in an unconstitutional way on a spurious basis, a false basis, to seize a website with the hope, the idea that Americans won't know that they can go to presstv.ir instead of .com. Again, it's a sad day for America. It's a very sad day for the First Amendment, and it's a demonstration of American weakness, not strength.
And Daniel, so finally, you know, when we take a look at this news, it was major news outlets did cover it. Major media outlets had it in their headlines. So do you think that in a sense then this may also backfire on the U.S. intentions when it comes to the message that it sends, because it shows that it's restricting the freedom of speech, it's restricting what our guest there talked about, Constitution in terms of the First Amendment, you know, when it takes this type of approach to websites and media outlets, that again, in a sense, it backfires on them.
Yes, it may at least contribute to raising the attention or raising awareness of what is happening. But at the same time, we shouldn't forget that many of the major U.S. media outlets have themselves felt anti-Iranian tropes for so long, and including language. Oftentimes, in a very undifferentiated manner, reproducing at least parts of the language of the syntax that has been used by the State Department, which had demonized or has been demonizing Iran for decades now. And at the same time, of course, Iran has been constructed as a threat to such an extent that it may just be easy to continue this narrative. And we've seen similar, I think, the strobe of or narrative of disinformation has been rather prominent within the political discourse within the United States, but has also served some sort of patriotic and nationalist goals, because it is an inherent part of this extraterritorial U.S. violence in Western Asia that is being used for other imperialist, colonialist policies, that effectively the idea of public communication, of media freedom, is pretty much suppressed within that framework. And I think the disinformation narrative has also been, to some extent, employed when it comes to the foreign policy towards Russia, where it has been quite successful, and where it has been replicated in the U.S. Mainstream media. So I wouldn't necessarily rely on Western media calling vindication of freedom of press.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me thank our guest, Brian Becker, from the Answer Coalition from Washington, D.C. Thank you for your comments. And Daniel Yeches, thank you, author and researcher there from Beirut. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitale, entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Iran is a country rich in natural resources and blessed with a dedicated population whose skills and expertise in various fields, coupled with firm belief in Islamic teachings, have defeated the most intricate U.S. plots over the past 42 years, including the eight-year war imposed through Saddam in 1980s. All the country needs is dedicated, professional, and efficient managers to turn the wheels of economy, whether or not the U.S. ends its economic terrorism. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Kayhan International. This article is published under the heading, Iran has all ingredients for economic revival. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Iranian President-elect Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, after a rousing welcome from people in Mashhad, gave a pledge to a huge audience at the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him, to establish an administration of social justice for the welfare of the whole nation. Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, calling himself a humble servant of the threshold of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and the Ahlul Bayt, on the occasion of the birthday celebrations of the eighth infallible Imam, cited instances from the model government of justice of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and promised
to choose the most efficient officials for the various ministries in the best interest of the nation and the people. His recent press conference in Tehran showed he is not the person to bow to blackmail when he rejected any discussion with the Western regimes of Iran's right to develop missile technology and other means of defense. Raisi also ruled out the notion of any meeting with the U.S. president, since such a question never arises in view of the criminal, anti-human nature of the American administration and Joe Biden's continuation of the terrorist policies of Donald Trump. He made it clear that his principal policy is to tackle the economic woes of the people and improve their living standard that has nosedived, mainly because of the unwarranted link with Washington's reneging of the JCPOA. Iran is a country rich in natural resources and blessed with a dedicated population whose skills and expertise in various fields, coupled with firm belief in Islamic teachings, have defeated the most intricate U.S. plots over the past 42 years, including the eight-year war imposed through Saddam in the 1980s. All the country needs is dedicated, professional, and efficient managers to turn the wheels of economy, whether or not the U.S. ends its economic terrorism. The Americans, or for that matter, the Europeans, can never deal a blow to the economy of resistance within the framework of which Iranians are not dependent on imports, since the country has all the ingredients for meeting the three basic needs of the people, that is, food, housing, and clothing, all of which require sincere efforts for self-sufficiency without any huge amounts of foreign currency. Now, everything is available in Iran for proper management of agriculture, irrigation networks, rearing of cattle, sheep, poultry, setting up of textile mills, and building of residential and commercial units with all the modern facilities. Iran builds its own bricks, has plenty of stone quarries, produces surplus cement and steel, manufactures almost all home appliances, and has an experienced workforce in all these fields, ranging from engineers to laborers, without the need for foreign workers. As the president-elect Dr. Sayed Ibrahim Raisi again emphasized in Mashhad recently, his objective is implementation of social justice, which, if it takes practical shape, can work wonders by reviving the economy. A thriving economy not just provides security at home and raises the living standards of the Iranian people, but strengthens our neighbors in ensuring peace and stability by rooting out terrorism and the U.S. Zionist bid to destabilize Muslim countries.
Good morning!
Jewish Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.